Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. This is your host, Dr. Terry Mason, the show The Doctor in the House. And it's heard every Sunday right here at 10 a.m. on AM 1690 WVOA. And, of course, this is the first Sunday of the month, so this is the University of Illinois Sunday. And we're going to always have our University of Illinois partners. They've been great partners with us, and we appreciate their continued support and providing not only great guests, but great topics for us to discuss and make sure that our community is more aware of. And today is no exception. Today, we're going to be talking about head and neck cancer. And to do that, we have two guests from the University of Illinois. One is Dr. Callahan, who is associate professor of oral and maxillofacial surgery. Basically, oral means the mouth cavity, and maxillofacial, that's another part of the face and neck and head. So we will get into that, and he's done a lot of work in this area. In addition to that, we also have with us Dr. Chen Lin. Dr. Chen Lin is also in the Department of Otolaryngology, which is head and neck and that sort of thing, and he's going to be talking about exactly what these tumors can do. So we're going to first begin with Dr. Callahan, because before we start, I want to set the tone correctly. And Dr. Callahan, first of all, I want you very simply to say, what is cancer in a generic sort of view? Because cancers are pretty much the same. It's just that where it starts is how we determine and how we name it and what it differentiates it. So, Dr. Callahan, you want to go ahead and say, what is cancer?
Good morning. So cancer is just an overgrowth of cells, so like an uncontrolled growth of a cell that the body is no longer regulating. So it can come from any type of cell type, but in the head and neck, we mostly see it come from the surface tissues, so the inside of the mouth, the gums and the tissues of the tongue and the floor of mouth and things of that sort.
Now, what are usually some of the things that start this normal growth, I mean, that takes this normal growth and starts making it abnormal in terms of it growing and doesn't follow the rules of normal cell growth? What are the things that usually can cause that?
Well, there are a number of things that we know are associated with head and neck cancer. And just to give a little bit of background, there's sort of two different disease processes that we're aware of. There's oral cavities, so like your tongue and your teeth and things of that sort. And those are mostly associated with smoking, drinking, parafunctional habits, particularly those two things together. And that's more or less a disease of older people, not exclusively, but we see that much more commonly in older population. But then when we talk about the base of tongue, so the tonsils, the base of tongue, and things of that sort, that Dr. Lynn deals with more than I do, those are more associated with HPV, so human papillomavirus. So we see kind of both of those things being major factors in causing oral cancer.
So these things create a change in the way, because all of our cells are always multiplying, dividing, repairing themselves, and so forth. So what happens with an HPV or with cigarette smoke or alcohol? What does that do if we know that changes this from the normal kind of division and repair of a cell to it becoming cancerous? And what does that mean?
Right. So there's a kind of this theory that people talk about. It's called the multiple hit theory. So we know that there are people out there that smoke and drink their entire life and they never get cancer. But each time you do something that is potentially carcinogen, it makes the body harder to heal. And then your own body's genetic makeup also plays a part of that. So, you know, you need kind of multiple changes that will then cause a disease process. But everyone is a unique individual. So we do see people that smoke and drink their entire lives and get cancer. And we see people that have very few or no risk factors that also develop cancers, whether that's from environmental things or just their genetic makeup. You know, it is a disease that can potentially affect anyone.
So these head and neck cancers, now and ask Dr. Chen, in your part of the practice, because both of you are going to be speaking, and I really want our listeners, the point of my questions is to get people to understand that the cells that become, that are cancerous or can become cancerous, are the ones that are already there. Is that correct? Is that a correct statement? They just undergo a change?
Yeah, correct.
So these aren't new cells. They're some cells that come from someplace else. So if I understand what Dr. Callahan was saying correctly for the listeners, is that some of these agents like cigarette smoking or HPV virus or what have you, what do these things do to these cells? Because people still don't understand what cancer is and why it becomes such a problem to treat.
Right, so you're correct. So typically the most common type of head and neck cancer that we see is called squamous cell carcinoma. So these squamous cells are normal cells that line the mouth, just as Dr. Callahan has said, like your tongue, the lining of your mouth, on the inside of the cheek, the gingiva, all these are squamous epithelial cells. And so when these cells are exposed to chronic periods over decades of smoking, drinking, the combination of them, this can cause cellular changes within those existing cells, genetic mutations that essentially lead to cancer, just as Dr. Callahan had said, which essentially, these cells become abnormal, they start growing too much, and then they start eating away at the other normal cells surrounding them so that this cancer proliferates and grows. Regarding the other type of cancer that we're seeing more commonly caused by this virus called human papillomavirus, it's been well known, typically more in other parts of the body. But over the past 20 decades, we've really grown to understand this type of cancer affecting the tonsils and the back of the tongue. The tongue in an area that typically can't be seen if you're really just looking in the mirror at home. But this is caused by a virus, but essentially it's still causing changes to the lining of these lining of the mouth back there, and those cells are undergoing genetic mutations that are leading to cancer too.
So in a nutshell, what we're saying is that the cells that the cells that become cancerous are cells that are normally in our mouth and in our back of the tongue and so on and so forth, but become changed by these chemicals that are in things like cigarette smoke. Is that a correct assessment?
Exactly.
So the people that what people then are least likely to develop these kinds of cancers? And then we'll get to what they are and how we treat them in just a moment. So go right ahead.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
No, so what kinds of people, what are the risk factors other than smoking and what have you? Are there other risk factors that people should be? For example, my mother had had throat cancer. Am I going to get throat cancer? Is it something genetic? Or is it that the habit may have been passed down that created the changes that started with my mom and my dad?
Got it. Typically not. Typically we see these cancers as a result of the environment and what you've done yourself, such as smoking for yourself rather than a history of smoking in your family, but you haven't smoked. Regarding oropharynx cancer, which is the tonsil and base of tongue that's caused by this human papillomavirus, really all of us, as I see patients who have this, they did nothing to get this. Any of us out in the population could get this. Especially all of us who grew up before the HPV vaccine was available. But nowadays, with the vaccine and the guidelines changing, it's widely recommended that boys and girls at a young age should be getting this vaccine in the hopes that this protects them against oropharynx as well as the other types of cancers that can affect the body.
Well, this is good information so that parents out there, you're suggesting that they should get for their child, their young adult, the HPV virus for, now it's not just for oral cancers, but there are other cancers that the HPV virus causes, particularly in the female reproductive area. Could you comment on that just briefly?
Yeah, so this vaccine, I believe when it first came out, it was recommended for girls, but over time, we've known the effects of the oropharynx and just overall, just as you said, some of these processes. So now it's recommended that boys and girls, I believe at the age of 11 and 12, should be getting this vaccine. Depending on the age that they get it, up to the age of 26, they would get 2 or 3 doses of the vaccine. But even now, some people up to the age of 45 can even get this vaccine.
Thank you. Well,
so I actually just got this vaccine. I'm a little bit older to have not been recommended this as a child, but there is a significant risk, and the vaccine is really low risk. It is recommended up to 26 in the normal people, but in anyone who is in the oral cavity a lot, it's recommended to late 40s. So, I'm currently undergoing my cycle right now.
Well, the reason I wanted to spend some time on this, because whatever we can do to help prevent this is a good thing. And from what I understand, one of my understanding is that obviously smoking is not a good thing for either of these, for these cancers. And the use of the vaccine is a good thing to use, because there is some, would you say that there is some possibility of sexual transmissibility of these this virus, both from the penis or vagina to the oral cavity or rectal cavity?
The answer is yes.
So the virus ultimately is sexually transmitted.
I'm sorry?
Yes, this virus is sexually transmitted, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the reason why I just wanted to spend some time with this, with the audience, because people need to know that these things are can be obviously prevented based on what we're doing. And these tonsillar cancers that are from the HPV can come from having oral sex, and these other cancers from cigarette smoking. Cigarette smoking doesn't do anything good for anybody but the tobacco company, from what I understand. The only benefit is from the tobacco company. So there's no and the nicotine is an addictive substance, and we know that. So we need to make sure that our children don't get an opportunity to even start. Now, what about other things, not like tobacco-based cigarettes, but what about marijuana? Would those things contain those opportunities to change the cells to create these cancers as well? Either of you can take that.
My knowledge. Good question, and we hear this often. I typically say to patients, to my knowledge, we don't have significant data yet to say that there's a relationship there. Dr. Callahan, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the prevalence of marijuana smoking in the greater community is relatively new, especially the studies on it. There is a theoretical risk, especially because you're putting something with heat, and part of the reason that cigarettes cause cancer is not just because it's a carcinogen, is that heat breaks down the tissues and allows those carcinogens to come into the body. So there is a theoretical risk, though it's not really proven in the same way that cigarette smoking. I mean, we know for a fact that, smokers are 10 times more likely to develop oral cancer. People exposed to secondhand smoke are 2 times more likely. And then that risk drops back to normal if you stop smoking for a number of years.
So this is something that we have a tool to help prevent called not smoking. What about oral tobacco products, chewing tobacco, things of that nature?
They're also clearly associated.
So tell us just a bit about, from both your perspectives, who do you see, and when they present to you, what do you see that they have when they present, or what did they come in complaining of, if anything?
So the two most common things that we see, either people come in with a sore in the mouth, so something that's not healing. They oftentimes think that they cut themselves or they have a dental abscess, but the sore is not healing. It may be bleeding. It may be painful over the course of a number of weeks or months. And the second thing we might see is a lump or bump in the neck. Those are the two most common presenting things that we see for oral cancer.
Now, the lump and bump in the neck, is that an early sign, or is that a later sign that there may be spread of this disease beyond the oral cavity?
That's a good question. It kind of depends on the different processes, but to briefly discuss what a neck mass is, that's typically considered regional metastasis, so basically spread of that cancer from where it started, whether that's the tongue, the tonsil, and then it spread to the lymph nodes in the neck. That's typically the first place it's going to go. As Dr. Callahan mentioned, sometimes in these tonsil cancers or base of tongue cancers, we'll actually see the only presenting sign is actually just a mass in the neck. And so we work backwards by getting a biopsy and diagnosing through the neck mass to figure out where this is coming from, because it's not always very obvious. Some of these cancers don't show themselves to us as readily as if they were growing in the mouth, such as the tongue, around the teeth.
The other question I've got to ask you is about symptoms. I think that what we've done is overplay the whole idea of symptoms. Because probably there is no symptom, and this is what I say, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what I always say on the radio, is that there's usually no symptom of any cancer anywhere in the body in its earliest, most curable stage. So if you're waiting on a symptom, that's much like waiting for smoke to come out the tailpipe of your car before you decide to take it in and get a tune-up. So what is it that... And if that statement is not correct, please correct me, but these particular things, who usually picks up these things in the mouth or what have you? Or is this something that you encourage people to come to your clinic and have the good oral exam?
Unfortunately, fortunately, most cancers in the oral cavity are found late when they're much harder to treat and survive. And a lot of that is because the oral cavity is kind of a mystery to people. And I highly encourage everyone and to see their dentist every 6 months. A lot of the oral cavity cancers are found by dentists because they're the people who are looking in the mouth the most often. Most dentists will do an oral cancer exam every time they see a patient. When they're found early, in my experience, most are found by dentists. I'm interested to see what Dr. Lin's experience is.
Yeah, for my end, I usually see the referrals come through general ENTs, so ear, nose, throat doctors. We also do a lot of oral cavity exams. Sometimes we'll get some referrals from primary care physicians who see something that's obviously abnormal, and they send it our way, too.
All right, so the profile of someone that we need to make sure that they're getting these screening exams, how would you profile? Who are the ones that are definitely at risk, high risk, versus the ones at lower risk? And if you're saying people, I'm not sure how many people go and have a regular exam by the dentist, but we're saying that the dentist, the primary care doctor, may be your first line of getting someone taking a good look in your mouth. You want to comment on those things?
Yeah, I would say the factors that we've talked about, really a long history of smoking, often decades long, and age too. So typically these patients are in their 50s, 60s, 70s.
And when they're found, what is then the course that you guys take and the things that you offer at the University of Illinois for people? And I know that it's different based on the stage of disease that you've uncovered. So it does make a difference if you get something earlier or late, because there are different ways that this gets handled. You want to walk us sort of through that with maybe somebody who comes in with something small in the mouth picked up by a dentist versus somebody who comes in with a lump on their neck?
Actually the process is very similar, and Dr. Lin and I do a very similar process. It's very much standardized to make sure these patients get the most appropriate treatment. So when they come in with a concerning mass or lump, usually the first step is a conformational biopsy, whether that's a needle into the lymph node or the lump or bump, or taking a small piece of that ulcer or sore in the mouth and sending it off to pathology. And once we've confirmed there's a cancer there, we'll likely get some sort of imaging to see. That imaging depends on whether this is a high stage or a low stage tumor, but all patients are going to get some sort of imaging.
And then when you say imaging, what do you mean? What do you mean when you say imaging?
So something like a CT scan or an MRI or potentially something called a PET scan. Those are all imaging modalities to look at both the tumor itself and then the lymph nodes of the neck, and then potentially other parts of the body that might be at risk for the tumor being spread to.
There's some people that are calling in that have questions for you, and we'll pick this up, but we're going to go ahead and take our first caller. You're on the air with our guests. Go right ahead with your question for our guest, please. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. My name is Carol, and I'm calling about prostate cancer, though, the treatment of prostate cancer.
Okay, that's not what we're talking about on this show. We're talking about oral cancer. So
okay.
I'll bring somebody on to speak specifically about prostate cancer, but the two guests that we have on from the University of Illinois today are specifically talking about head and neck cancer. And not prostate cancer. Okay? So right. I will answer that at another time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other callers? You're welcome. Any other callers? Do we have another caller? Caller, you're there?
Yes. Yes. Thanks
right
for
ahead.
Taking my call. Thanks for taking my call. I think I heard one of your guests say something about smoking, how it breaks down sales. I was wondering if they could be more specific with that. That's just in lungs, or and can that affect your whole body, or you know how does that work? I'm not a doctor. I don't know biology like that. How does that affect your cells in your body?
So if you think about the inside of your mouth like a barrier, so a raincoat. So it's a raincoat over your cells. And as you smoke, that kind of that heat and the trauma from that action kind of breaks down the raincoat. And those carcinogens that are then in the smoke can get through and into the body. So that's why you may see cancers associated with smoking that are outside of sort of the aerodigestive or the mouth and the lungs, because it's allowing those carcinogens to get into the body.
And these carcinogens are what?
So there's over 20.
What do you mean when you say carcinogen? What do you mean when you say that?
So there are over 20 compounds that are found in cigarettes that have been associated with a formation of cancer. So carcinogen means that can be cancer-causing. So over 20 compounds that we know of that are actively associated with causing cancer.
Now, does that matter whether it's cigarettes or cigars or pipes? Does it make a difference?
The risk with pipes and cigars is actually quite similar to cigarettes. So people tend to smoke those things less, but they tend to smoke them for longer periods of time. So the risk is not less, depending on what you smoke. Smoking as a whole, 10 times more likely to develop oral cancer.
And that includes cigars as well?
Yes.
That's great. And, you know, I mean, this is really good information, and I do want my callers to be focused on the topics that we have, because I have the two experts here in this particular area. So I want to make sure that we take advantage of their being here and spending this time with us to ask about these particular cancers that can create problems. Now, who gets this? Who do you see most commonly with these cancers, whether it be the ones in the mouth or in the tonsils or in the other parts of the throat? Who do you see most commonly at the University of Illinois?
Sorry, could you elaborate more on that?
The demographics, that is age, race, gender, those would be the three things that I'd ask about.
Yeah, so as far as age, I would say our typical patients, if we're talking about these smoking patients, tend to be maybe in their 60s, 70s. As far as the viral type with HPV, these patients can be a little younger, so maybe in their 50s, 60s. Often these patients that we see, and as a whole, tend to be of the lower socioeconomic class, and as we said, obviously, lifelong smokers. I think here at the University of Illinois, we do see the underserved population more. And so as far as my patient population, the ones I've seen with cancer, that would be more of those patients. I will comment to you, though, as far as the oral pharynx, such as the tonsil and base of tongue. These patients are very different because often these patients don't have a history of smoking. They can, but we often don't see them with a history of smoking. And so this really can skew to both men and women, often right down the line, if not a little bit more towards the men, can have these types of cancers. But they can otherwise be very healthy and live a very healthy life.
So this exposure for them is more HPV related? Is that the point you're making?
Yes, exactly. For those who get diagnosed with tonsil-basal tongue cancer that's caused by this virus, they can be just people who've lived a very healthy life. Yes.
And their age group?
The virus caused it. Their age group can tend to be a little younger, so 50s, 60s.
Okay. And so now, if I'm an adult and never had an HPV vaccine, is it too late for me to get one?
Not necessarily. As Dr. Callahan mentioned, nowadays the guidelines can have patients getting the vaccine up to the age of 45 or a little bit around that age. So it's always helpful to just check in with your primary care doctor and see if you're still eligible.
All right. So the patients that you see, let's talk about the smoker, for example. When these patients present, are they still very early, or are they medium, or are they advanced? And if they are advanced when you see them, why do you think that's so?
As a general rule, oral cancer tends to present later than other cancers, and that is associated with a negative overall survival rate, unfortunately. And I think a lot of that has to do with there is always a lot of stuff going on in the mouth, and it's very easy to think that maybe you have a dental infection or you burned your mouth on some pizza or, you know, this sore is just going to go away. And it's just kind of a very easy way to kind of denial yourself out of dealing with what's going on. But the mouth is a really important part. And if we can find these cancers earlier, people will do better.
You mentioned earlier that the dentist is a person who is doing mouth exams, obviously as part of what they do. Should patients then, when they see their dentist, ask them specifically about did they see anything in their mouth, particularly if they're smokers or what have you, that is of concern? How should the average person manage this?
I mean, I think it's always important to be an advocate for your own health. And asking your provider every time, whether it's your dentist or your medical doctor or whoever you're seeing, if you did an oral cancer screening, it takes just a minute or two, and there is no harm in someone looking in your mouth. There is no negative to that, only positive.
I think that's a great piece of advice, because whether it's your primary care doctor, your gynecologist, would you say that particularly those people who admit to smoking should definitely make certain they're getting an oral exam when they come in to see their primary care doctor, even though there may not be a complaint relative to that area? Would you say that's a true statement?
Yes.
So we want to put out something so to let people know that your doctor or dentist should be, or your doctor, primary care doctor, should be looking in your mouth. Your dentist obviously is going to be looking in your mouth, and they need to let you know if there's something there that you need follow up with, as I'm sure many of them would if they saw something, particularly if you have a history of smoking. Now, let's say if you don't have a history of smoking, do your risk, should that still be something that you have your doctor screen for or look for?
I don't think it hurts. It's a relatively easy and quick exam. They don't need to be looking and knowing exactly the spots, but just looking quickly, shining a light, taking a look in the mouth, making sure that everything looks symmetric. There's nothing obvious pointing out. It's always good to have that done.
And because I think that a lot of patients or people who come to see the doctor assume the doctor is going to do everything that needs to be done. And if the doctor doesn't say anything, that means for many of them that everything is fine. But I think your point about being a good custodian of your own health is to ask the question specifically around oral health. Would you say that that's a fair statement?
Yes, definitely.
And we want you to all, that's why we're doing these shows, is to arm you with the things that you need to make sure you're asking the questions and getting the answers that you need to be a better participant in your own care. Because at the end of the day, whatever is advised, if you don't do it, it won't happen. And if it doesn't happen, it may cause a problem with things down the road. I don't know if we have any other callers. If we do, we'll take our caller. Caller, you're on the air now if you are there. Hello, caller? Any caller?
Hello, Dr. Mason.
Yes, go right here. Yes, ma'am.
Here. I struggled with acid reflux, and my medical provider said, listen, if you don't stop drinking them pops, I'm not going to call the name of the pops. You're going to be looking at Big C. So I went to doctors at U of I, Rush, and I got opinion at U of C. Luckily, I just barely missed it. But they said, you better stop drinking all of those pops. Now, I didn't smoke when I was 8. I'm 73. When I was 18, I smoked for about 6 months and quit. But 10 sodas, drinking them like that, you know, I had to have one in the summertime just about every day. Can't that cause...
You mean for oral cancers? For cancer
yes.
of the mouth?
Yes.
All right, I'll ask our guest.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Either you want to take that question?
So far as I know, there's no association with soda and oral cancer. There is an association with reflux and esophageal cancer. So that may be where they were talking about. Because when you have reflux, you can get something called Barrett's esophagus, which is a change in the cells of the esophagus, which then can cause cancer. But that is not related to sort of the tongue or the gums or the tonsils.
Okay, so that's related to the acid coming back up into the lining of the esophagus. Is that what that's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Do we have another caller? Caller, if you're on the air, go right ahead with your question for our guest.
Hello? Is that?
Yeah, yes, go right ahead.
Oh, good morning. Two questions. If you have a lump in your throat, never smoked, could it be a cyst? If it is there a simpler test initially to see if it's a cyst? If it is, what do you do? Do you watch it? Does the primary care doctor watch it? If you could please answer that, and thank you.
You are so welcome, and we will.
So if you have a lump in your throat, it kind of depends on, I would start with your primary care doctor and just checking in with them, and they can help initiate a further exam and workup. If it's something that you can actually feel or even see on your neck, typically from there we would want to get some imaging and then even a biopsy potentially. But imaging can really help us better understand what this is, what the surrounding structures are, and where it's coming from. But if it's more of a feeling of a lump in the throat, still something that you could see your primary care physician about, but ultimately it may be something that you would want to come to see someone else, including an ENT, an ear, nose, throat doctor, or seeing your dentist.
And I think the imaging part that the doctors are talking about is whether they get a CAT scan or ultrasound or something like that to look at it better than what they can see with the naked eye. So those, when we use the term imaging, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about either some kind of X-ray or ultrasound or combination thereof to try and figure out what we're looking at. So thank you for the call. And I think that that's important. And if you happen to feel one, you can't necessarily tell what it is. So the key is always go to see your primary care physician. And if necessary, they will make a referral to an ear, nose, and throat physician for further evaluation. We're going to take another caller. Caller, you're on the air with your question. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was calling about, I came in kind of late, but the doctors said something about sores being in the mouth, and I was wondering what type of sores, because I had heard before if you have like a white bump on your tongue and it stays white, that was some type of sign that something wasn't right. So I'm going to hang up and listen to the response.
All right, go right ahead.
Right. Any sore in the mouth should definitely not be ignored, especially ones that are not getting better. You know, things that I and Dr. Lin look for are white patches in the mouth that don't scrape off, red patches, areas that bleed, and areas that are very firm, anything that is kind of raised or tender. All those things need to be evaluated. And I highly encourage anyone who has a sore or a lump in their mouth to get that evaluated. It is always better to know exactly what it is than to ignore it.
Yeah, I would echo that point as far as just as simple as things that aren't getting better. It's just really important to get that taken a look at.
Well, the thing is, the question becomes, someone has had something like that, and maybe they've seen someone, maybe they haven't. Is it possible then for them to come and see you or to make an appointment in your clinics for that evaluation?
Yeah.
Definitely.
And what's that process? And can you put out a phone number that people could call to make such an appointment?
Yeah, for me, I'm located here at the University of Illinois Chicago, so UIC Hospital campus. And so I specifically practice in the new specialty care building, the new outpatient surgery and clinic building. And for appointments, they can call 312-996-6555.
And you want to repeat that two more times, that number?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the number is 312-996-6555. And so that's our UI Health Otolaryngology or ENT department clinic number. And they can certainly ask for me or any other ENT provider. And again, that number is 312-996-6555. But if people out there also want to just Google UIC ENT, they'll be able to find that number on Google as the first link as well.
Sir, I'm also on UI campus, but I'm at 801 South Paulina Street within the dental school. And our number for scheduling is 312-413-9346. 312-413-9346.
So I hope everyone got the numbers, and we'll repeat them again before we go off the air, because it's really important that you have this. And the point of this show and to have these guests from the University of Illinois is to we have the University of Illinois guests every first Monday of the month. So I want you to really take advantage of this. Write this down for someone else, because it may not be you, but it may be somebody you know or somebody in your church or someone that is having this problem that you happen to meet and talk to casually about, and they say, oh, I got this thing in my mouth. Well, this would be something that should be looked at. Do we have any other callers? Caller, you're on the air if you have a question. Go right ahead.
Yes, my name's Patricia. I don't know
if you
called.
Yes, go right ahead, Patricia.
Yes, this is not concerning any dental. This is concerning my ear. I took a flight, and when I came back, my ear didn't pop. So my left ear, it's gone now. It's not. And when I swallow, I have something going on in my right ear, so I don't want to lose the hearing in my right ear either. I went to University of Chicago, and they just sending me through something, so...
It sounds as though you need to be making sure you see the ear, nose, and throat people, because that's who you want to see. They're probably having you. Do you have a primary care doctor at the University of Chicago already?
No, I do not. And I went to a ear, nose, and throat specialist.
Okay.
Down
all right,
there.
Good.
So, yeah, they're not saying anything. And then I guess the only thing they're prescribing is a hearing aid. But this is some other kind of problem because when I swallow, it's a clicking. I just swallowed. It's a clicking in my right ear. And that was the same problem with my left. So.
All right. Either of our guests have any suggestions for this caller? And thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, it's a little difficult to say what's going on. Typically, I start with an ear exam, but a hearing test is also very important to get. And both of those things together would be able to help give us better information about what's going on. So if you hadn't addressed this question with your ENT, I would recommend checking back in with them.
So checking back with the ENT doctor, let them know that this problem has not been either addressed or you don't understand what's going on if they've said anything to you. And make sure you ask to speak to one of the attending doctors at the University of Chicago. I mean, a lot of places have residents and students and things of that nature, and that's fine. But you always want to make sure you speak to someone who is an attending, and they'll know what that word means, attending. All right, let's go to our next question. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, you can hear me? Okay.
Yes, go right ahead.
My question is just really quick. On the basis of testing, I would like for them to express about the biopsy as well as imaging and which definitely should come first rather than the other.
Well, I'm sure they can address that from their own clinical points of view. Doctors, you want to go ahead and address the question, please? Thank you. And thank you, caller, for calling. Thank you. And I know who this is, so thank you for calling.
Yeah, so in general, depending on if we're seeing something, say, on the tongue, we'll oftentimes try to just obtain a biopsy in the office because it's streamlined, it's quick. And from there, we'll often order imaging, too, especially if we're very concerned about the lesion. But sometimes that's not always the case. And so there are times when someone may already have imaging in place. Maybe a biopsy wasn't something that was possible, especially if this was spotted by someone else, such as a primary care doctor. So they ordered a CT scan. And so that's very appropriate, too. So I wouldn't say there's exactly a law or rule that a biopsy has to come first. But typically, in our clinics, the biopsy will come first if we can get the biopsy in the office.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, if you can see a lesion, I prefer the biopsy at first. It helps you know what sort of imaging you need to get. But if it's unclear, then imaging might come first.
Okay, well, that's a great question. Let's go on to our next caller. Now, caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead with your question or comment. Hello? Turn your radio down and just listen to the phone. Don't listen to your phone. Caller, are you there?
You. Hello?
Hello. Yes, go right
ahead. Yes. All right. My question is, I've been listening to this program, and you got a lot of questions about imaging and a whole lot of other stuff. But what about the cure? I haven't heard either doctor say anything that after they do all this and have the testing and they find out that they got it and or whatever, what is there a cure? Do people ever get a cure from this? Or what's the deal? I'm sitting here like this sounds is very sappy that I'm sitting here saying I could get this and there's no cure for it. I just don't know how long I'm going to live with it or suffer with it. No doctor has said, well, you know, what your stage might be or whatever, what your possibility is for a cure. They have these commercials running for the proton, I think it's called proton surgery they give people, and they could
first of all, you
kill all the cancer cells.
Yeah, but let's first of all go back and ask the doctors who are our guests today, because how well somebody does depends on what the cancer is and its stage. And so I'm going to let the doctors answer that question. Go right ahead, doctor. You're on the air.
Yeah, so as far as treatment goes, exactly as Dr. Mason said, and Dr. Callahan, we have to know first what it is with the biopsy. Once we have the biopsy, we get the imaging to determine the stage of the cancer. After that, we can talk about treatment options because it really depends on the stage. But as far as the three general treatment options, or really two main treatment options, it's surgery upfront, and the other option would be radiation upfront. Typically, when we're talking about cancers in the mouth, such as the tongue, the gums, lining of your mouth, surgery is the recommended option, but radiation and chemotherapy could be potential options needed after surgery. And Dr. Callahan and I always certainly go into a very detailed explanation of the options there, because absolutely, there's a cure. There's a cure for most patients.